The following talk was given by Steve Hagen at Dharma Field Meditation and Learning Center in Minneapolis on October 11, 2015. This talk may not be played or reproduced for profit.
Good morning. It's good to see you. I think it might have been the last time I spoke here on Sunday. I read a poem by Ryokan from this book, Sky Above, Great Wind, the life and poetry of Zen Master Ryokan. And there's some really good pieces in here. So if you don't mind, I think I'm going to read a couple more poems here and talk about these. And then maybe you might have some questions or we can have some discussion. But this is Ryokan. He said, "When Jojo asks yes, I say yes. When he asks no, I say no. When you ask yes, I say nothing. When you ask no, I say nothing. When you ask, how is it so? I still say nothing." This is real kind. Yeah. So what's he talking about here? Jojo, this is Joshu. Joshu. You know, maybe you know the story of Joshu's Mu. Joshu was, when asked, does a dog have Buddha nature? He says, Mu. Mu is just a negative. You know, he negates it. It's translated as no, but it's not just simply no. It's just the negates it right there. Does a dog have Buddha nature? Mu. This is a pretty popular koan. And very common. What's less well known is elsewhere where Joshu is asked, does a dog have Buddha nature? And he says, yes. So when Jojo, here he is, when Jojo asks, yes, I say yes. When he asks no, I say no. When you ask yes, I don't say anything. When you ask no, I say nothing. And when you ask, how is it so? What's going on here? I still say nothing. So why does he say yes when Jojo says yes? Jojo says yes, I say yes. Because Jojo understands this question of Buddha nature or reality or your true nature. And so if he says yes, 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 sure, yes, we can say yes. You can also say yes if you want, but if you're just flapping your jaw, maybe you should say nothing. But Jojo understands, and so he says yes. Of course, at another point, he says no. Now we want to know, why does he said yes over there, but over here he says no. And then we start thinking about this, analyzing, you know, what are the circumstances, you know, and what was going on there? Who was he talking to? And we want to know all these things, and we'll have a big discussion and debate about this. And Jojo, he just says no. Ryokan, who can see this Buddha nature, he said, he can understand. Yeah, yes, yeah, sure, yes. No, yes, of course, no. Yeah. It's all very clear. What's going on with these guys? Ryokan and Jojo. Are they just playing a game with us? Are they teasing us? Are they just acting silly? Are they just saying any old thing? Sometimes people think that's Zen. You just, any old thing, you know. It'll do. Well, that would be a big mistake. These are Zen masters. They're always pointing to reality. Our problem is that we grasp. They'll point something out that cannot be grasped. though you can see it. So they point it out, because you can see it, they'll point it out. But we're not satisfied with that. We want to grasp it. We want to get hold of that. Well, of course, we ask the question, does a dog have Buddha nature? What is Buddha nature? We'll ask questions like this. And we ask these questions because they want we want them to hand us, I don't know, a brick or something. Something we can get hold of, something weighty. Maybe something that has meaning. Of course, if they did hand us a brick, then we'd wonder, why did you hand me a brick? I mean, what is this for? What does this mean? You know, and we just keep playing that game. And they just throw out a word. Yes, well, you expect the word? Well, yes, yes will do. It's not like yes is wrong. The dog of Buddha, of course, yes. Really? No. And then we're puzzled because we're trying to hang on to something. And generally, a Zen teacher is kind enough, compassionate enough, to not really hand you much at all. Best if they don't hand you anything. But even when they don't hand you anything, you will see something there and you'll take hold of it, not realizing this is just something you've created yourself in your own mind. You think you just got that from the teacher. If the teacher does hand you something, you should realize that they never hand you something with the idea that you should take hold of this. Maybe they've handed you something for you to just look at this and to see the nature of your own question that doesn't really relate to reality at all. It just relates to kind of business as usual, our usual thinking and grasping mind. This gets very frustrating for us as long as we really continue to function in a way where we expect to get hold of something here. You have to understand that the Buddhas, the awakened ones, and the great Zen masters, they're not hanging on to anything. You think that, well, because we're all hanging on to something, aren't we? Our own identities or something. We're hanging on. It's just how it is. I mean, if we're here, we're hanging on to something. Probably a lot of things. But maybe they don't hang on to a lot. But they got to be hanging on. Well, we think like this. I've spent a few Sundays now talking about different teachers, Dogen and others, Wang Po and others, who point out that, you know, the reason we don't wake up is because we're hanging on to something. We don't relinquish our views. Not only do we not do that, we don't even understand the seriousness of it, or that they, in fact, are actually deadly serious about this. Because we probably have a deep conviction that you can't let go of your views. You can't relinquish, not all views, you have to be hanging on to something. This isn't to say that you need to be without views. Nobody's ever said that. There are views, and we have views, and the Buddha also spoke of right view. But right view is a view you really can't hang on to, but you can see it. And it is very fluid, very liquid. You can't grasp it. It's like grasping a river, and it's just going to trickle out between your fingers. Something like this. It's something very fluid. Reality. This doesn't mean that, well, because we can't grasp, because we can't get an idea of it, then we should just shut up and not say anything. As my teacher once told me, you know, when I was at a loss as to say anything, when I finally started understanding what this was, and he said, well, you have to say something. If you don't say anything, nobody will understand. So as frustrating as it is to listen to this or to read this or to study Zen and all this kind of thing, we need to do this and try to help you direct your attention to just what is going on. And what is going on is continuously something that you cannot grasp, but you can see and you can know. And in fact, you already do know it. You know the truth. You know reality. How could you not know reality? This is all you ever experience is reality. But we keep putting it into chunks, into pieces, concepts. And we throw labels on them and this sort of thing, and it becomes all very abstract. We don't realize that because it all seems very concrete and real, like a brick that we might be hanging on to. And then we work with everything like this. And we try to make the right arrangements with all of that so we can understand. But you have to understand that the awakened ones, Ryokan and Jojo and Dogen and Nagarjuna and Buddha, they're not doing this. They see through this. They see that anything that you can take hold of here cannot actually be grasped. It's just an appearance. Looks like there's something there. Looks like there's something here, me. You always see it all. But you can't get hold of it. You can't even get hold of this me that you might refer to from time to time. What are you referring to there? If you ever check that out, investigate, you realize that you can't get hold of anything there. Now, this isn't to say then other than that we're saying that you don't exist or something like that. That's another extreme. That's another, got an idea there. I am something that doesn't exist. Well, what does that even mean? It's just kind of silly, you know. But what's driving us here and what we're concerned about, we're always trying to figure out, we're trying to get hold of it. We're trying to put things into form, into graspable forms, which is very functional and useful in our everyday life in a limited sort of way. Be very careful with that. But when it comes to this matter of waking up to reality and understand what is truly going on here, that doesn't serve us at all. It just keeps us locked in confusion. So Jojo, he can say yes, he can say no. Ryokan can hear that and he can understand. We hear that, and when he says yes, we think that he's saying yes. Yes, there's a dog, and a dog has Buddha nature until he says no. And then, well, wait a minute. We have a dog. He just said yes, and now you're saying no. And how am I going to put all it? He's not expecting you to put anything together here. Other than to see that, you know, you really can't pin it down. That's what he's pointing out. But Ryokan here, he says, well, if Jojo says yes, well, yeah, sure, I'll say yes. Jojo says no, I'll say no. I'm sure Ryokan isn't locked on to yes or no. Neither is Ryokan, neither one, Ryokan or Jojo. But when you say, you ask, yes, what does he say here, Ryokan? He says, I say nothing. If you say yes, if you ask yes, he puts it as ask here, ask or say, it doesn't really matter. That's another issue, but I won't get into that. But he says, when you ask yes, I say nothing. You ask no, I say nothing. Why? Because is he being mean to you? Now, this is deep compassion coming straight out of wisdom. He says nothing, Ryokan, because he knows. If I say anything at all, you'll get confused. You will not understand. But it isn't like he says nothing, because actually he is saying something. He's written this poem. He has to say something, and he has. He has to, in this case, write something, and he did. And now we can read it a couple centuries later. But he didn't just simply say yes or no to you in answer to you, whoever you are. Don't take it personally. Don't ever take any of this personally. You'd be better off. There's no one there to take it personally, so don't worry about that. But when you say this, well, unless you're awake, if you're awake, then there's no problem here. But in our ordinary, we will ask a question like that. Yes? No? But he says nothing. But he doesn't let it go at that. He writes a poem about this. But he says nothing because he knows that if he sets anything out there, you'll pick it up like a brick or something. And you'll be confused. Now what do I do with this brick? There we are. It's like another expression that we have in Zen, the Zen master, some Zen masters, this is kind of a criticism of some Zen teachers. They'll hand you a chain. And you thank you very much. And we take this chain and we just strap it on. They'll hand you something in a very unskillful way that makes it easy for you just to go ahead and grasp it and strap it on like a chain. It's bondage. So this is kind of a criticism of unskillful teaching. But it is the kind of teaching we like. We like listening to teachings and reading stuff that we can grasp. Because it feels like you're getting somewhere. Wow, I can get hold of something here. I can take something away. But a skillful teacher, one who really understands, realizes that that's a chain. If inadvertently, of course, they're saying things, and so they're not throwing anything out there as bricks or pieces that you can pick up. But we'll take them in that way, and sometimes they'll see you do that. This is why you need to work with a teacher for some time. Because over time, they can start to show you that all the stuff you're picking up, this isn't what was said. I have on occasion had students come in and tell me that I said such and such. And I hear that, and the way it's been brought back to me is something I don't recognize at all. I said that? Yes, you did. I heard you say that. Do you know where I said that? Can we put it in some context or something? But I can assure you, if it's Dharma teaching, you come in and if you're sitting in front of a talk or you come in and see me in Dokusan or something, I don't mean to give you something for you to hang on to, unless we happen to be talking about just some practical kind of everyday things. And even there, I would say, in a limited way. So just be careful with this. But you have to understand, when you're listening to this teaching or reading this kind of teaching, it's not ordinary teaching. It's not an academic study where you are expected to learn and grasp certain things. They'll be on the test, this sort of thing. That's not what this is. You just come back to it and come back to it and come back to it. And when you leave, just leave. When you leave the lecture, you put the book down, whatever, then just leave it. And then come back to it, and come back to it, and come back to it. When I say you leave it, I don't mean spend a lot of time thinking about it now, writing down, taking notes and stuff. If you must, go ahead, that's fine. But that's not required. That's you trying to grasp something here. And you should understand, if it's true Dharma teaching, Ryokan is a great Zen master, in addition to being a great poet, this stuff isn't meant for you to take hold of. It might be helpful for you to know that. Now, if you are grasping things and taking things away and that sort of thing, that's fine. But just be careful with any of that stuff. Anything that you take away from anything, ever. Whether it's from a Dharma teacher or just out there in the world somewhere. Because reality is very fluid. And the only thing that's making it solid and graspable is just your own confusion of mind. Were that not the case, you would wake up to the fact that you're living in this fluid reality all along, and you already know it completely. You already are Buddha, awakened. This Buddha nature is already yours. So we can say yes. Of course, when we don't realize this, we're confused by this, and maybe we could say no. But we can switch both of those around in both cases. That's how fluid it is. When we're grasping, that doesn't make... I don't understand. Reality is thus. It's like that. In the end, there really is nothing to say. So the person goes on, he says, when you ask, how is it so? How could it be like this? And Ryokan says, I still say nothing. Nothing to say here. Because again, if he says something, at this point, if he says something, then you will think that he's said something that can be grasped, taken away. And also at that moment, when you grasp something, here you are. There is the ego formed. You can identify with this, or you can reject this, or whatever it is, but you're formed and that thing is formed. And it isn't even wrong that things are formed here. It looks like it, so that is the apparent reality. That's the relative reality, the relative truth. Looks like that. Sounds like that. Feels like that. Tastes like that. Here it is. So there's nothing here to... It isn't about throwing any of this away or rejecting it or saying, oh, it is not so. We can't say it's not so. Ultimately, there's nothing there formed to be not so. So it's neither yes nor no. Still, if we have to say something, we can say yes or no. One who's awake might say yes or no. But when you ask about this yes or no, someone like Ryokan, with deep compassion, you know, he just doesn't say anything. So if I say to you, as I already did today, that you know the truth. You know, maybe you've heard me say this, I say it often enough. But just realize, you probably think, maybe if I say something, that you already know the truth. You might be thinking that I'm talking about something you can get ideas about. But I'm not talking about that. When I say you know the truth, I don't mean for you to get ideas about this. So don't think about this. If I say you already know the truth, and I already said today even, because this is what you experience. You experience the truth all the time. I also pointed out that you can't get hold of that, but you experience it all the time, directly. There's no barrier between you and reality, you and truth. But for your thinking, that makes it all murky and cloudy, and you find things there that you think you find things there that you can get hold of. And then you think that the assignment is to somehow work that out so I can see. All the while ignoring the fact that you already see. You already see truth. But for your thinking, you know, this would be very obvious to you. So it's a matter of just waking up to that, to realizing how it is that you grasp. That's why I also suggest, I tell you, I don't mean to just suggest, I want to tell you, watch your mind. I do say this. Of course, when I say watch your mind, then you might think that I'm talking about something solid here. Something, there's a you here that needs to be watching this thing called your mind. Just pay attention. Pay attention to what? Pay attention to, notice that you're grasping things. Notice that you're making things solid here. And that's not really what I want you to do. I want you to notice that you're doing that. So if I say watch your mind, I don't mean now for you to make that into something solid that you can hang on to or grasp. Or even evaluate it in some way. Think, well, that must be pretty good teaching maybe. Or maybe you're unhappy with me right now, and so you think, well, that's just Steve's talk. But you can do whatever you want with it. I don't care, but I would like to help you wake up. I know that it isn't anything in particular. Just because I said it doesn't mean it's necessarily good or necessarily bad, as is anything else here. And my concern is not that you grasp any of it. So what do I care if you say good or bad? It doesn't really matter. My concern is that if you do grasp and you think good or bad or whatever, yeah, I want to help you out of that confusion. I recognize that that is confusion. Not that there actually is something here that's good or bad, including things you might criticize me for. I understand. And again, I don't like being criticized in a bad way. Now, who does? But if you praise me, I don't care to hear a lot of that either. Though it feels a little better than being criticized. But in the end, it's not necessary. I just want you to wake up. It's all I want. It's really all I want. I want to stay awake myself. I want to come back to awakeness. And I want us all to wake up and to live out of awakeness. That's all. So every once in a while I have to eat something. I have to get some sleep, some exercise. But it's because I want to live out of this awakeness and I want to help you wake up. That's all. It's not good or bad. To wake up, is that good then? I'm not saying that. But there is deep burning pain and suffering, confusion. And there's release from this. When we see this, when you're living out of this, when you see this, what are you going to do about this? What are you going to do? But we can do these things, we can point to these things, we can live out these things that are conducive to living out of wholeness, totality, not occupied with self. There's happiness in this, there's joy, there's compassion and settledness and patience. And then, of course, we can lose these things as well. But beyond this, the other little details, we'll take care of those things. Like I said, you have to eat and get some exercise and some rest and all this sort of thing. Just take care of these things. And be kind. Let's be kind to each other. Which is easier to do if you're not grasping something. If you're grasping something and now they're grasping something that's kind of a threat to this thing I'm grasping. And now we can get kind of angry and pretty soon we might be fighting. Maybe we won't be so kind. But if you're not hanging on to things, here we are with it. We deal with these things, we take care of these things, all of them. Even the stuff maybe that doesn't seem so good. Take care of it. Don't say it's, evil, let's get rid of it. Now what are you doing? What have you become? So this is living out of awareness, out of just presence, coming back to this. Awakeness. This is what I want for you. I want this for all beings. I want this for myself as well. Well, anyway, so this matter of good or not good, here's another little poem, but this is actually a little longer, and I hope I don't talk any longer. But I got to read you this one. Here's another one by Ryokan. He says, "What was right yesterday is wrong today. What is right today, how do you know it was not wrong yesterday? There is no right or wrong, no predicting gain or loss. Unable to change their tune, those who are foolish glue down bridges of a lute. Those who are wise get to the source, but keep wandering about for long. Only when you are neither wise nor foolish can you be called one who has attained the way." Now, what was right yesterday is wrong today. We're living on these ideas, this is right, this is good, that's bad. Everything's frozen. We're really hanging on to this, and we really think it's this way, ignoring the fact that it is all very fluid. You can't pin down right or wrong or good or bad. And what was right today or wrong, what did he say? What was right yesterday is wrong today. And what is right today? How do you know it was not wrong yesterday? I think of that movie by Woody Allen, that one off in the future. I don't know, 300 years in the future or something like that. You know that movie? I don't know what I can't remember now, but They're sitting around just smoking like fiends, you know, six packs a day or whatever. What? Sleeper? Yeah, okay. But they were just smoking like fiends, and they're saying, you know, back in the 20th century, they thought smoking was bad for you, you know. But it is kind of like that. How often do you, I mean, the fact that Woody Allen could make a joke out of that shows that we all know, yeah, that what was right yesterday is wrong today. And what is right today, how do we know it was not wrong yesterday? What is this right and wrong? Well, we're saying that. We're calling it that. Well, of course, you could say, well, yes, but smoking causes lung cancer, and it's the thing, yeah, and that's wrong or that's bad. Yeah, of course, we can discern that. But you don't have to make something out of that. Maybe you look at what you're doing there. Are you smoking a lot, whatever? But just look at this. Take care of it. But to say that it's wrong or bad, this is just how things unfold here. It's very liquid. But we can see what the patterns are and how things appear. Live accordingly. But we'll lock it down. This is good. And then we'll say, this is good or this is bad. And how often do we find things that were... I mean, I remember back a ways, what was Linus Pauling who came up with the idea, well, vitamin C is good for you. It helps to prevent colds or something like that. And so you should just load up on vitamin C. You know, so people were loading up on vitamin C, but then some years later, then I think that they saw there was kind of a link between vitamin C, too much vitamin C, and cataracts, you know. And I don't know where we are today. Maybe now they realize vitamin C gives you 20/20 vision. I have no idea, you know. But it is kind of like that. So be careful. Treat all of this rather loosely. Keep your eyes and ears open, because your life really is the life of the world. It's not you. But just see what is going on here. But you don't have to live in this rigid way with, oh, ish, this is bad, and this is good over here, and this is better. And we get friendly, and the folks who, you know, do this or whatever, we're friendly with them, and then we just stop it. And it does resemble something like, you know, that horrible event last summer in that church in, was it Charleston, South Carolina? The people were killed, murdered. But afterward, their family, the families of the people, you know, said to the perpetrator, the accused anyway, we forgive you. It resembles something like that. It doesn't excuse, you killed my loved ones. It doesn't excuse that. It doesn't mean that there isn't pain and sorrow and hurting. Maybe some anger. Maybe even some hatred is there, but I won't say, I want to say that I care for you, I love you. Jesus talked about that, to love your enemies as yourself. How do you do that? If you're really hanging on to this idea of self for me and wanting to protect this and taking offense and anger or hatred against anything that might threaten it or injure it, this is a very difficult way to live. But if we notice that this thing here that's me, that we're this identity, then we think, of course, is good. Anything that threatens it must be bad. If we lock into that, very difficult, you know, to love your enemies. And, you know, it doesn't even matter then I was just, you know, strive to tolerate and be good and kind to my, you know, just forget all of that. But wake up to the fact that this is all very fluid and it changes. And what was good then is, you know, another argument, I would say, against capital punishment. A person was bad, they did something bad. Yes, but they can change too. And sometimes they do. And of course, that's a pretty permanent thing for something that you don't even know for sure if they're really the perpetrator, because how often have we put to death people that had nothing to do with the crime. But we'll lock down on things, and we'll think it is so right, and we'll see it in just a small context of this and that, and right there. Not in the context of the whole, where the real life of everything is. That is the whole life of everything. We can learn to live out of a heart like that, and a mind like that, an understanding like that. But we have to take notice of this thing. What was right yesterday is wrong today. What is right today? How do you know it wasn't wrong yesterday? Then he says there is no right or wrong. Yeah, nature. There is no right or wrong. There are those things and actions and whatever that are wholesome. Of the whole, of totality, of selflessness, there are these things that point to this. We can live out of it. We can learn to see out of this. But it isn't like that is right as opposed to some other way that is caught up in the fragmented world, the divided world, the broken up world, one piece warring and fighting and squabbling with another. In totality, we can see all of this and act out of the totality and out of the wholeness. There is no right or wrong in nature. It's not a matter of being right or wrong. There's no predicting gain or loss, he says. But unable to change their tune, those who are foolish glue down bridges of a lute. They're unable to change their tune. Their tune is, this is what they see, this is what they think, this is what they believe and hang on to. These are their views and understanding. This is their tune that they play. And they glue down the bridges. So that's the tune they can play on this lute. Instead of being free to move the bridges and change things as appropriate for the moment. But in our thinking and in our grasping, this is what you have to understand. Your mind becomes brittle. It becomes rigid, inflexible, intolerant, unbending. Even though the world you're living in is completely fluid. If we are not so foolish, what foolish means, it doesn't mean you're stupid or something like that. What he's talking about, these are people who are fooled by reality. You're fooled into thinking that these things that we grasp, not seeing them as chains, are reality. The way it is. It's the way I see it, this is the way it is. Can't change from that tune. Everything that's fluid and flowing and flexible around us is just doing that, but we're bouncing around from one thing to another. Clashing with one thing or another. So unable to change their tune, those who are foolish, those who are being fooled by all of this, they glue down, and we glue it down intentionally. I want to make it so we'll start working on that identity or that belief or whatever it is, and we start building structures around it as well. Make it even more firm, even though it flies in the face of reality itself. So those who are unable to change their tune, they glue down bridges of a flute. Those who are wise get to the source. They get to the source of all of this. What is going on here? And you can't do that if you're still hanging on to this and that. It isn't a matter of throwing this or that away, destroying this or that, or that's more rigidity again. Here it is. There's this and that, and there's things that aren't healthy, and there's things that are painful and difficult. There's also things that are fabulous and wonderful, and we want to go rushing toward those. All of these things can toss us about. But we, in the midst of all this, we can, and you do this through watching your mind, not getting caught by this or that. Discerning, realizing that the reality we're living in is utterly fluid. So those who are wise and not being caught in these ways, then, they can get to the source, he says. But they keep wandering about for long. The wise ones, they keep wandering about. They wander about. Why do they wander about? Because there is so much suffering in the world. So much pain. do you wake up to the truth? If you see this, if you're not a Pratheka Buddha, you know, a Pratheka Buddha is one who's looking for enlightenment for themselves. That's the goal. I will arrive at that. But the Bodhisattva ideal is one who's on this path, takes it, but for the benefit of all beings, realizing that there isn't anything, for me to hoard this to myself isn't really full awakening at all. There is this pain in the world, this suffering in the world. And if we see something about that, that maybe we can help to point this out to people, what the problem is, how it is that we get caught by this or that, then we can maybe help people who are otherwise caught up in this thing. So they wander about, they stick around. We have this saying that the Buddhas don't speak, they're silent. We don't hear them. It's the Bodhisattvas who walk around and say something, make noise. So those who are wise, they get to the source, but they keep wandering around for long, he says. Only when you're neither wise nor foolish can you be called one who has attained the way. Now this is Ryokan. Yeah, and he's somewhat transcended wise or foolish, and yet still, just the very fact that we had Ryokan, even though in his mind he was very free and fluid. Also somebody like Joshu, who we were looking at earlier, Jojo, he very fluid and free, and still they can say something and express something while they were here. That can help us. But some of these teachers, there's others I could point to Uman and some others, that there they are. We do have some teachings by them. But very free. They don't wander around quite as much. But only when you are neither wise nor foolish, you haven't glued down the bridges on the flute, and even though you've gotten to the source, would you stick around? Yeah, but if you're not neither wise nor foolish, only then can you be called one who has attained the way. Which isn't to say then that there's something better. We don't see this in a hierarchical way. It isn't even necessary to see that the wise are better than the foolish. The wise are a part of the foolish, inseparable from the foolish. They don't have to identify as foolish, but they also don't have to identify as wise. The wisdom is in seeing that this is all very fluid, and then live accordingly. But there might be times when maybe, because of circumstances or whatever, we're in a situation where maybe we can offer some teaching or something like this, or maybe we can be free, like Ryokan. But even there, he still leaves offerings behind. But only then can you be called one who has attained the way. I am not one who has attained the way. For your sake, I have not attained the way. I must be here. As long as I can say something, I will continue to say something. As long as you keep showing up, if nobody shows up, maybe I'll stop. Then I can wander away and be free. But otherwise, you just remain here. You can do this too. Just come back to this, wake up to this, see this, recognize the rigidity that occurs within your own mind, and just learn to let that go. When you see, but I like that, I identify with it, that's me, that's how I see that little fight that might start rising in the mind, that little warring that might be going on there. And don't fight with it. Don't ever fight with yourself. Just see. Get acquainted with those kinds of workings in your own mind. And then you can be free. But also maybe at that point you realize that your life isn't yours. Then maybe you will just stick around. Well, boy, I didn't think I would go on this long. But I did. But I'll stop now. But maybe, do you have a question or an argument or... Do you like this Ryokan? Yeah? It's pretty good translations here too, I kind of like. But nothing? Thank you.
Thank you for listening. To hear more talks on Buddhism, Zen, and related topics, visit dharmafield.org.